I'm Daniel King.
And I'm Scott Lawley.
And we're the authors of Organisational Behaviour, published by Oxford University Press. The purpose of these podcasts is to look in a bit more depth at key ideas from the book and to get different perspectives and connect some of the themes together. Scott, you've been looking at a bit of more detail about the Gilbreths then.
Yeah, so in chapter three, we talk a little bit about Frank and Lillian Gilbreth, who were a married couple, worked together, particularly on the time and motion study, which is seen as being part of scientific management and rational work design. And I guess the time and motion study, and it's still done today in a lot of work, is where you look closely at work being done and you measure the movements that are being done to see if you can make it more efficient. Famously, what the Gilbreths did was they would actually film people doing their work. They'd have a stopwatch in view. They'd play it back with a grid over the lens so that they could actually plot the movements that people made to see if you could make them more efficient. An example, they did a lot of work with builders. They got them breaking world records for how many bricks they could lay per hour. I guess what a time and motion study would do is if you had a builder walking to the other side of the yard to pick up some bricks and then lay the bricks, you'd say, hang on, that builder's wasting movement there. Let's put the pile of bricks by their side so they just have to reach round, get the next brick, and it's a lot more efficient. Famously, they did the same things with typists. They looked at the positions of the eyes and the fingers while they were typing. And again, they got typists breaking world records for the number of words per minute. So the time and motion study is something that they applied to a lot of different types of work and became quite famous and quite renowned for that.
So that sounds quite a lot like Taylorism.
Yeah, and often it is seen as part and parcel of Taylorism, and certainly the Gilbreths and Frederick Taylor were working at the same time. They knew each other. They certainly at the start admired each other's work, and you know, Frederick Taylor said, if you are doing scientific management, then one of the key things you could do is learn from the Gilbreths and how they scientifically measured work to make it more efficient. So, yes, certainly there's a lot of similarities there, but as time went on, they did sort of split from each other a little bit. And I think what it was, the Gilbreths had a bit more concern for the experience of the workers. So they saw Taylor as being purely about the stopwatch and get people to work as quickly as possible, no matter what that work is like, and to experience doing that work. And we know Taylor, you know, created really boring, monotonous, repetitive work for people. I think the Gilbreths were more interested in the motion side of the time and motion study. So it was almost like, if we can position the tools to do a job so that they're just easy to reach out and grab, or, you know, if we can make a desk and a chair more comfortable, it just makes the work more straightforward for people to do.
So they care about the experience of the worker a bit more then?
They do. And I think Lillian Gilbreth plays a key part in this, because, you know, Frank was the engineer. He was the one who really had the most in common with Taylor. And wanted to design work like it was a machine. But Lillian Gilbreth, her whole academic background was in psychology, so she was interested in how workers experienced work and satisfaction that they had with work. She was very much into workers bettering themselves. You know, she thought that the factory should have rest areas and reading materials.
It's a bit like the Hawthorne studies then?
Yeah, I guess so. It is sort of saying that these people at work are not just cogs in a machine. They are actually humans. I think you could link it not just with the Hawthorne studies, but some of the stuff that's in the chapter on motivation as well. You know, particularly the people like Hertzberg who talk about job satisfaction and what people take from that. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think Lillian Gilbreth's view was that work is important, but it shouldn't get in the way of the rest of your life. And so if you can make the work as straightforward as possible, that efficiency gives you time to then actually go out into the rest of your life and enjoy that. And you know, Lillian Gilbreth did say that it would be a very impoverished life if all you did was worked, and you know, from the money you earned, you didn't then have the time to actually enjoy life itself.
So interesting, the well-being of the worker. It sounds almost like a fusion of psychology and engineering is the approach they're taking.
Absolutely, and yes, certainly with Frank Gilbreth, you got the engineering came in, and certainly with Lillian, you got the psychological side. And I actually think what they did, you can see a lot of that in the workplace today. So, you know, from the engineering side, we talk nowadays about ergonomics. And you may well, you know, work at a desk where you can adjust the height. Or, you know, if you look in a McDonald's workstation, they've got everything colour-coded, so you instantly know where to put something. And everything's easily within reach. You're not walking around to locate it and that sort of thing. So, you know, ergonomics is this idea of the layout of the work and the tools and the workstation being straightforward, not only to make the work more efficient, but actually to minimise injuries. You know, you're not straining your back or straining your joints to do something like that. And also it helps with precision as well. And another area of work that the Gilbreths looked at was surgery. They actually looked at an operating theatre. So, you know, this isn't the sort of low-skilled or de-skilled work that you get in a factory. This is obviously highly skilled work. But if you imagine a surgeon performing an operation, they want to be able to reach out and grab the scalpel straight away or grab whatever tool they need. They don't want to be messing about, searching, where did I put that scalpel? Is it in this drawer here? Is it whatever? You know, they need everything to hand.
And you want that away. If you're patient, yeah. You want something to
absolutely.
Know what
you're
doing,
you're reliant on the precision and accuracy of the surgeon in that case. So these are all things where ergonomics, just making the whole layout of the workplace, is important, and we still see it today. And of course, the other thing that you know, certainly from Lillian Gilbreth's side, is this idea of work-life balance. You know, that work is important, but my goodness, it's not everything. You know, if you can get your work done in as straightforward a way as possible, then that's going to give you more time to actually enjoy what you've earned and to have a life outside of that. I think, you know, Lillian Gilbreth sort of saw that in all areas of life, not just in work, but in the home and the sort of...
So what did they do in the home then?
Well, famously, the Gilbreths had 12 children.
12?
12 of them, yeah. They were very productive in many areas of their lives, and one of those was the 12 kids that... that they had. And actually they became quite famous for this. As much as they were industrial pioneers with the time and motion study, perhaps where the wider public know them best is the film Cheaper by the Dozen, and that came from a book that was written by two of their children, basically about their upbringing with 12 kids. And you know, so Lillian Gilbreth was this full-time management consultant. Sadly, Frank died quite early in life, so she was having to run the family business and the household by herself, and there were 12 kids.
That's a big undertaking.
It is a massive undertaking. So, of course, they applied these efficiency ideas and the time and motion to the household itself. Some of the examples were... In the bathroom, they had a gramophone player, the old-fashioned record player, and they would have language learning records, you know, teach yourself. And the idea is that if you're sat in the bath, you can have that record on at the same time, so you're maximising your use of that.
That's what Taylor did as well, didn't he?
He was very similar, Taylor, yeah. He looked at areas of the household and... try to work out if they could be more efficient as well.
But the idea of constant self-improvement like that is quite a sort of modern phenomenon as well. People are still trying to take on these sort of ideas, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, it all came from this idea that, yes, there's this household of 10 kids to run, but we're not going to let that swamp life completely. And interestingly, if you look at some of the archives of Lillian Gilbreth, where she sort of put her day's work, and people think she must be working every hour of the day to run this business and bring up the children as well. But no, there was a lot of leisure time in that as well. She didn't have every hour of the day planned out. But what she did do was, when she was having to work, she made that as efficient as possible and as straightforward as possible, so that she wasn't, you know, constantly in this sort of domestic service or in this sort of professional service. There was a life outside of the two as well.
But I heard she had something to do with the design of the kitchen as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting where Lillian Gilbreth's career went. And by the way, she hated cooking, which is the ironic thing, that she did have something to do with the design of the kitchen. But yeah, when Frank had died, as I said, she had to take over the family business. And I mean, Lillian Gilbreth, I think, is the absolute star out of this family, to be honest. And the fact that she went to university, yeah, we're talking about the 1920s, 1930s, when women did not do that sort of thing. You know, she was brought up in a family where she was expected to marry well into a middle class family, and that would be all that she would do. So to go to university, she faced sexism at university. She had professors who would refuse to teach women, for example. To publish a book, she published her PhD thesis, which again was about the psychological aspects of scientific management. You know, Frank had to really negotiate to get that published, and it was just done with her initials because the publishers said, women just don't publish on this, so we're going to hide the fact that you're a woman. And then when Frank died, all of these contracts with engineering companies, which was very traditionally a man's realm, she was finding doors closed, she was finding those contracts not being renewed. And a lot of her work, she was sort of forced to do things like applying the motion study to department stores, to the work of cashiers, for example. And it was that I don't think it was by her choice, but she ended up working in domestic design. You sometimes hear people today, when they talk about the kitchen, talk about the kitchen triangle. It's the idea that you can stand in a corner of the kitchen and everything's in reach of either arm, you know, the microwave's there, the sink is there and whatever, and you don't have to move, you know, you can, everything's in easy reach. Well, that goes back exactly to what the motion study was about. It's making that domestic design as straightforward as what they did in the workplace. And again, it all comes from this sort of idea that Lillian Gilbreth had, that yeah, work is important, but you don't let it take over your life. And by making it more straightforward, it allows you more space to do the good things.
Well, the irony is, some people would say, is that we've increased efficiencies, but we seem to be working longer hours anyway.
Well, absolutely, yeah. But I think, you know, this is something where the debate is going to take an interesting turn, because, you know, as we are starting to see in other areas of the book, yeah, particularly in chapter 4, actually, where we start to look at automation. And I mean, that's the ultimate inefficiency, isn't it? Mm. That you actually design humans out of the process and you get machines to do the work. And it looks like we are now getting to this position of, is there actually going to be enough work around? And we're getting back to these questions that Lillian Gilbreth was asking about. Do we have to be working 5 days a week? You've already got some companies that have gone to the four-day week and the three-day weekend, and they're finding people are just as productive in those 4 days as they would be if they were working a full week. Well, I'm sure part of them being as productive in those 4 days is using some of these ideas that the Gilbreths brought about to make work as straightforward as possible.
So 100 years on, and they still seem as relevant now as they did then.
Oh, absolutely. I think Lillian Gilbreth is certainly one of the forgotten figures of management theory and organisational behaviour. because so much of what she did seemed to foresee what was coming afterwards. You know, we've already said she was advancing Taylorism, giving it a more human side. Well, this was before Mayo was doing his work on the Hawthorne studies, and before Maslow and Hertzberg were writing about motivation. And the fact that you can look at what she did and say, yeah, that's ergonomics, that's work-life balance, which are things that are being talked about today. She really was ahead of her time, I think.